Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
When Florida can have their results between 10 and 12 o'clock on the same day, why would we not respond to the voters who overwhelmingly, over two-thirds of Arizona voters, and even more at the national level, would like to know the results on the same day?
This bill would severely limit ballot drop-off options and shorten return times, disproportionately hurting rural, indigenous, elderly, and low-income voters.
This is for low to middle-income people. We want them to make more money. We want them to give better service. We want to provide and support those people that work in these industries.
Over the last few weeks of the Trump administration and the past few weeks of the beginning of the 57th legislative session, we have seen Republican elected officials work to make our country unwelcoming to immigrants.
She'll always put hardworking Arizonans first.
You're going to have my support.
Endorsed by President Trump, Karen Taylor Robeson for governor.
Everything we've learned about Colonel Gabbard during her confirmation process suggests that she is not the person for this job.
And with me to talk about Karen Taylor Robeson officially entering next year's gubernatorial race, lawmakers approving a measure they say will speed up election results and more, are Paul Bentz of High Ground. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
And Mike Hayner of Lumen Strategies. Mike, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Paul, let's start with Karen Taylor Robeson. This has long been rumored that she would jump into the gubernatorial race, and this week she did. What kind of impact do you think she will have on this race? Of course, Congressman Andy Biggs has already announced he's running.
Well, I think it's going to be a very competitive Republican primary. Andy Biggs is a pretty well-known commodity, especially in the Freedom Caucus circles. That being said, she gave Carrie Lake quite a run for her money 4 years ago in the last gubernatorial primary. She's an incredibly well-funded candidate. And most importantly, it would appear at this point that she has Trump's endorsement. I think we're seeing some polling and some other information out there trying to sort of knock that off and try to cut into that, maybe give the president some doubts about that. But with the president's endorsement and a well-funded campaign, she's got to be a front runner at this point.
How much of that? Obviously, you said gave Carrie Lake a run for her money. Money maybe being the operative phrase there, because as you say, Karen Taylor Robeson will be very well-funded. How significant is the Trump endorsement in that primary?
Well, what we've seen is that the Trump endorsement, whether it is in the congressional race and CD8 for Abe Hamadeh
in the West Valley,
or in the Senate race for Blake Masters previously. And throughout Arizona, Trump's endorsement is good as gold. He has incredible sway over the primary electorate, and we're looking at a head-to-head race. And certainly Andy Biggs is incredibly MAGA and has been from before it was cool, as
he was MAGA before there was MAGA
and Tea Party and everything else. But the challenge that Biggs is going to have is that he has not been a prolific fundraiser. He is very good on the rhetoric side. He's very good with the base, but he's never proven to be a particularly good fundraiser. And Karen Taylor Robeson is not only independently wealthy, but well-connected, has raised a lot of money for Trump, has raised a lot of money for the Victory Fund. And I think that puts her in a good position to talk to the electorate.
Mike, do you see this, as Paul does, as a pretty competitive primary?
I agree 100%. It's a very competitive primary. I disagree a little bit with Paul. I'm not sure that President Trump actually endorsed Taylor Robeson. He said that you would have my support. That doesn't necessarily mean it's an endorsement. We've seen in the past where he's endorsed two candidates in the same race. My expectation would be at some point he's going to endorse Andy Biggs as well. And so this race is going to be very, very competitive. And I think as Andy Biggs may not be a very good fundraiser, he has the support of Turning Points. And as Paul mentioned, he has the support of the base. And the base is who votes in the primary. And this election is all about the primary at this point. And I think Andy Biggs is going to give Karen Taylor Robeson a very good run for her money.
If you are Governor Katie Hobbs at this point, do you have a preference as to who comes out of that primary?
No, because that primary is 18 months away. We have no idea. We've seen seismic changes in the electorate's thought process over the last 4, 6, 8 years very quickly change. And so at this point, if you're wishing for one, you may get them and regret it.
Paul, we saw in Karen Taylor Robeson's announcement video, we've seen it in press releases, she's really talking about Donald Trump a lot. So to your point earlier about the importance of that endorsement and that support, it seems like she's really trying to lock it down, even though, as Mike pointed out, Andy Biggs even is kind of questioning, did he really endorse her? I'm not really so sure.
Well, he said in his speech that she'd have his support. I think that they're cozying up to the president and trying to ensure that they get that locked down. She's raised significant amount of money for him. She's raised significant amount of support for him. I suspect that this is all forays to ensure that she locks up that support. That being said, this is why we're seeing surveys out there right now showing that Andy Biggs has a lead. One of the surveys said that, you know, it was like 45 to 43 or something like that. 87% of the Republican primary electorate has not made up their mind in this election. I think those are all efforts. This is a game targeted at one person, and that's Trump. That being said, I think the other reason she's cozying up to him at this point is to try to build that support among the base, showing that direct connection between him and her, I think, is to her benefit. I suspect that they'll start early and trying to get out in front of this audience and narrate. But one thing Mike said that I tend to disagree with slightly is I think Governor Hobbs would absolutely much prefer to go up against Andy Biggs than Karen Taylor Robeson. You know, it prevents the narrative that some folks have said about the last election that it had it been Robeson and not Lake, that Robeson would have won. I also think that Biggs has challenges when it comes to his legislative record here in Arizona, as well as in Congress, you know, things like failing to restore Medicaid and other items that I think he would be vulnerable on in a general election. Whereas Karen Taylor Robeson can go to the right during the primary and then rely on her business and outsider background in the general election. Her narrative to Trump right now should be like, look, I'm a business person like you. I'm not a part of the swamp like somebody like a career politician like Andy Biggs.
Last question on this, Paul. Is there still a percentage of the GOP base, the primary voters, who doesn't trust Robeson as being right enough?
Oh, certainly. I think we're seeing that within the Turning Point group, the folks that are initially backing Biggs right away, the early endorsements of Biggs. That's certainly all part of that calculus that they're looking at.
Remember, too, that prior to this election in 2024, Karen Taylor Robeson hosted fundraisers for Chris Christie and for other candidates that were running against the eventual nominee, President Trump. And so,
yeah,
again, it's a difficult thing to prognosticate 18 months from now.
Sure.
This is going to change multiple times. And that's why, again, I think from the governor's standpoint, it doesn't really matter. Let the two of them fight it out, and whoever wins, wins. And that's who she's going to face come 2026.
All right. So, Mike, let me ask you about an elections bill that the legislature passed this week. They've fast-tracked it. There were bills in both the House and Senate. They say that Republicans say that this will speed up the process of counting the votes and having the results. Sort of the big headline on this one is that if you want to drop off your early ballot, you would have to do so by 7 o'clock the Friday before Election Day. You would no longer be allowed to drop it off at a polling place on Election Day itself. The governor has been pretty clear that she's not going to sign this.
Correct. She said multiple times that she will not sign that bill. The speed of voting or the speed of results doesn't equate to disenfranchising voters in rural communities and tribal communities. And so, again, I think that this is not a serious attempt by the legislature, by the Republican legislature, to actually get a bill done and signed. This is just, again, kind of politics.
But and to that point, the Republicans also appear to be crafting a version of this that would go to the ballot in 2 years to get around the governor's vetoing it.
Correct. And again, this has multiple additional provisions in it related to the early voting list and how you would actually have to continue to participate in that early voting list. So it's not just about election results. The other thing is, if you really wanted to get election results in time or earlier, faster in 2026, you would work to come up with a bipartisan bill that's signed into law and becomes effective before the 2026 election, rather than saying in 2025, we're going to put something on the ballot 18 months from now to maybe fix the 2028 election.
Paul, it seems as though there's sort of differing ideas between Republicans and Democrats, shocking, I know, about whether or not voters actually want faster results and care about faster results and the way in which that might happen.
Well, one thing to bear in mind is over 500,000 voters decided to drop off their ballot at a polling place on Election Day. So telling them that they can no longer do that is going to take a Herculean communications effort if you get rid of it. It also depends on how you ask the question, right? Republicans are shopping data that says, oh, this is incredibly popular to get results faster. But when you ask the question of voters, would you be willing to cut off early voting a few days early and stop the practice of dropping off ballots and making those folks vote in person? It's worth it to get results faster compared to I'd rather continue to drop off ballots and make it might take longer to count the results, but everyone should have a chance to cast their vote. 2-1 would rather keep the dropping off ballots.
Keep it the way it is.
Keep it the way it is. And but you say, would you like results faster? They go shop data says, oh, absolutely. Everybody wants results faster.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've got a little bit of a challenge on their hands. If they put it on the ballot, I don't see it being successful because
really?
I don't think people want results that badly that they want to limit their ability to vote. People like convenience. People like the ability to drop it off on their time. I mean, this is what we see. If they were to change the law, they better put a significant amount of money in there to communicate with the audience. Otherwise, they're going to have a lot of unhappy people on Election Day. Remember back when they had the presidential preference election and then independents aren't allowed to vote in that election and people were lining up and independents were kicked out of line and told they couldn't vote. Without that communication, a lot of people lost their jobs. And so if you change the rules and you don't communicate it, it's going to be a huge challenge for whoever's in office.
So Governor Hobbs, communications director, had indicated that there might be – the governor might be willing to go along with – you know, the 7 o'clock on Friday evening before Election Day, if Republicans would do other things like same day registration and things like that, does that make it more palatable to voters, do you think?
Not necessarily. Same day registration has not been a big mover among the electorate. I think that people get concerned about fraud. I think the bigger challenge that they have is this notion of that they've got to confirm their address. The whole beautiful part of the active early voting list is that you signed up to vote and you get sent ballots. And as long as you vote them, you stay on the
right list.
Making extra hoops to jump through, we already see stifles and chills participation. It already works for independents. Independents can vote in our primary elections, with the exception of the presidential preference. But they're sent a postcard. They have to pick a ballot. Mm-hmm. It's a whole procedure. And that's why independents don't vote and are treated unfairly in our primary election system. This is an extension of that. If you make people vote and verify every single time, you're chilling voter participation.
Well, and Mike, this would be the second change to the early voting list, whatever you want to call it, in not that long, right? Because it used to be the permanent early voting list. Then the legislature changed it to say that if you haven't voted in the last couple cycles, you have to like reaffirm that you want to stay on the early voting list, and it was changed to the active early voting list. Do you agree with Paul that would not be a popular provision among voters?
I agree 100%.
If you had to reaffirm your address. Then.
Again, remember that about 80 to 85%, I think, of the electorate actually votes by mail.
Yeah.
And so any time that you're trying to limit their ability to do that, now they have to change their behavior. It's less likely that they're going to vote. The whole point of early voting was supposed to make it easier and more convenient for people to do it because elections are held on a Tuesday. A lot of people work on Tuesdays. And so this was a convenient way for people to participate in our elections. And like I said, it's incredibly popular. And so every time you start to tinker with that, you run the risk of disenfranchising voters. And as Paul said, you know, chilling the right to vote.
Oh, one other thing real quick. We've heard the don't California my Arizona a lot. Calling this the Florida style law, I don't think does what they think it does. I don't think people want a Florida or Arizona. You see, I mean, there's shows called Florida Man, for example. And, you know, I don't think Florida or Arizona elections is something that a lot of voters will look at. I think it would ultimately be a negative connotation, not a positive.
Mike, let me start with you on Attorney General Chris Mays is among a group of attorneys general suing over the delegation of power to Elon Musk, saying what he is doing in terms of shrinking the size of the government, trying to close agencies, firing people, laying people off is not constitutional. She's had a pretty long streak of filing lawsuits over the last couple of weeks here.
She has, and she's been somewhat successful in doing that over the last couple of weeks. But again, this is a trend that we've seen again, over the last decade or so, where, you know, whoever the party in power is does something and the opposite party, state attorney generals decide to sue. And so, again, it's kind of the politicization of all of our processes. The one thing that is, I think, not really talked about in this area, though, is Congress's inability, apparently, to do anything to show that they are a branch of government. Right now, they just seem to be bystanders. And whether or not you're a Republican or Democrat, that's bad for our country when the Congress just allows the executive branch to do whatever they want without any checks or balances, because that's not the way that this system was designed.
Yeah, Paul, I mean, to Mike's point, I've heard people saying, you know, look, for example, like, let's take one that maybe people don't object to that much. Trump wants to get rid of the penny and signed an executive order to do that. You know, this person was saying, look, policy differences aside, if you want to get rid of the penny or not, that's fine. But Congress is the way that you do that. You pass a bill and the president signs it, and that's how you do it.
That's typically the way it's done. What we're seeing from this administration is that they're going to fire off executive orders, and then until they get pushback, they're going to keep doing it. And we saw this with the stopping of all funding and not really realizing that a two-page memo wasn't really going to accomplish what they wanted when it came to grant funding and, you know, medical research and everything else that it was going to harm. And so they're really sort of, fire first, ask questions later. And I think, you know, what Mays is doing and other things is actually very smart, because what you're doing is putting the emphasis on Musk. And we saw this with Matt Gaetz. When the heat gets too hot, Trump is willing to drop anyone for anything. And it already happened to Ramaswamy early on before it even took office. They're doing the same thing for Trump or for Musk. This is putting the heat and the emphasis and the focus on what he's doing and making him the figure so that ultimately they can get rid of him. In the meantime, you know, Musk is definitely feeling his oats. I think he is doing what he can while he's there and raising his overall profile. I mean, having his kid climbing on the Resolute desk and things. Yeah. It's a bizarre scene, but ultimately, I think it's putting Musk in the crosshairs.
Well, and there's been polling, right, that suggests that Musk's popularity is lower, in some cases considerably lower than that of President Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely true. And I you see the backlash on that. And I mean, anybody who's paid attention at all, it's very ironic that Musk is talking about government largesse and government handouts when the vast majority of his fortune was made on these types of government programs.
Politically, Mike, is this a smart move for Attorney General Mays to be parts of these lawsuits going after the Trump administration?
Well, again, politically, I think the proof will be in 18 months when she's up for re-election. And again, that's where things are going to change over time. But I think for her, and again, this is more, I think for her, about not the politics of it so much as, again, as Paul talked about, the overreach of Elon Musk and whether or not constitutionally, as a special government employee, he's able to actually do these things, again, without congressional approval. It just seems like it's not only good lawsuit, but it is good politics.
Okay, Mike, let me ask you about a bunch of Democratic lawmakers this week introduced a measure called the Immigrant Trust Act. This was done in response to a lot of the sort of anti-immigration proposals put forward by the GOP in the legislature. We talked earlier about the election bill the governor would not sign. Fair to say the Immigrant Trust Act will not see the light of day in a committee hearing?
No, I don't think that. I don't think that that bill will be heard. Obviously, most Democratic bills introduced in the legislature are not heard, but this one in particular will likely not get a hearing and be assigned to multiple committees.
It's interesting, though, because even on the federal level, for example, we saw both of Arizona's Democratic U.S. senators support the Laken Riley Act. We've seen, you know, some maybe movement to the right among some Democrats. Not this group, though. This group is seemingly going the complete opposite direction.
Yeah, it's understandable. Again, the party system that we have in America and Arizona, we have the far right and the far left, and they continue to keep going in those directions. And so you're going to have politicians and elected officials that do take those positions, but it's not really the mainstream of the party. And that's, again, a difficult thing for I think, voters to understand sometimes that, that those far extremes do things that might not make a lot of sense.
Paul, do you think this bill has any impact politically going forward, or maybe after this conversation we're having, no one's going to remember it?
Well, immigration's the top issue in the state. It's about 32% of the electorate's number one issue, including 64% of Republicans. More than half of Republicans, immigration's their number one issue. So actually, I think in some ways, this is a benefit of Republicans. They can point and say, see, look what these guys want. You know, we even saw some of the legislators saying, you know, I believe in the rule of law. And it gives them a place to go and say, we're offering common sense solutions, whether or not we think that those are, in fact, the case, that Republicans can say, we're offering common sense solutions, and this is what these guys want to do. And so I think, you know, no, it's not going to have an impact. I don't think it's going to get a hearing. I think it's a talking point that Democrats are probably on the losing side of. I think there's other issues that they certainly can score better points on, but they seem to pick these topics over and over, to Mike's point, to satisfy their base. And I'm not sure they're actually winning the undecided portion of the electorate, the swing audience, with this type of topic.
Do you think that this has any impact going forward politically? Like, does this impact, again, 18 months till the next election? Does this impact Democrats in any way, do you think?
It's part of a narrative. And again, I think that you've seen over the last 2 years, you know, Governor Hobbs has been at the border multiple times. She's put hundreds of millions of dollars into border security. She's got the National Guard at the border. She's working with the Trump administration on how they actually implement, you know, barriers, whether they're electronic or physical, at the border. And so, again, it's part of a narrative. And I think the Democratic message needs to go back to kind of that cinema bill from a year or so ago about all the different parts of this, because it's not just what happens at the border. It's how we deal with folks if they're here and when they're coming across the border. And it's a comprehensive issue that really needs a comprehensive solution, which that bill was.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Mike Haner, Paul Benz, thanks you both for coming in. Happy Statehood Day, guys.
Happy birthday, Arizona.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.